Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to be back here. Even though we had a really good weekend and didn't want it to end, it's just awful nice to be back here in front of this microphone and getting to spend time with you. Second hour, Father Sam Keyes will be here with us. First hour, and we'll do Ask a Priest with Father Sam Keyes. First hour, we're going to talk with our good friend Simone Riscala about the feminine genius. But before we get into all that, I do want to thank everybody who came to the conference. The conference, I thought, was a smashing success. Our keynote speaker, Sister Regina Marie Gorman, I don't think I've ever heard a room like that room when she was speaking. You could have heard a pin drop. She was so good. Dr. Scott Hahn, a fantastic talk. Dr. Logan Gage from Franciscan University, Dale Alquist, Dr. Francis Beckwith from Baylor University, and then all of our guys. It was a lot of fun. We had a really good time. And if you came, thank you very, very much for coming. And in a particular way, I want to thank Cowboy, who brought 2 dozen donuts to the conference. That's the way you come to a conference. You bring 2 dozen donuts with you for the host. The number here is 888-318-7884. If you'd like to talk about the Catholic Church's view of women, of womanhood, of femininity, this whole hour is for you. 888-318-7884. Simone Riscala, as I said, is our guest. She's the Director of Program Growth at Endow, which educates women toward a more profound understanding of the God of their own God-given dignity through study in small communities of faith and friendship. Simone, it's nice to see you again.
Cy, it's so good to be back. I've missed you, and I'm so sad I missed the conference this year.
You know what? It's weird, though. They put you in a video. There. I think they were just trying to make us look good. Yeah, the video guys, they made a commercial for Catholic Answers, and you were a prominent part of it.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
I love my Catholic Answers family, so I'm honored.
Especially because everything goes so smoothly with our audio-visual connections. I think that's... they were working so hard in here to get this straight, and they literally got it correct 4 seconds before the music started to play. So that was a
masculine genius. Masculine genius.
The masculine genius was struggling here a little bit. But I want to, if I may, we're going to talk the whole hour about the feminine genius. But the last time you were on, you talked with us about Armenia. Your family is Armenian, part of the Armenian diaspora that followed the genocide of Armenians. And it's very, very concerning what's going on there. Do you want to give us any update or just tell people maybe where they can turn if they want to be helpful to our brothers and sisters in the oldest Christian country in the world?
Yes. Thanks so much for asking about Armenia, because just 4 or 5 days ago, actually, after what has been a 10-month blockade from Azerbaijan to this Armenian Christian enclave called the Nagorno-Karabakh, also known as Artsakh, these Christians have been are being ethnically and religiously cleansed. The International Court of Justice has called it a genocide. And in the midst of that 10 months on the brink of starvation, just last week, Azerbaijan took military action against civilians and the people of Artsakh. Yeah, that happened last week. In 24 hours, Artsakh surrendered, because you can't starve people for almost a year and then they can't defend themselves. So this so-called ceasefire agreement that's going on now is not exactly, it's very complicated, but long story short, there are now 500 people who've died from that military aggression, and they have clearly stated that they will go after Armenia proper, and the Azeris are referring to Armenia proper as Western Azerbaijan, which is their plan, their goal to completely eradicate all Armenians and all Christians from that region, creating one big pan-Turkic Islamic region. So that's very intense. Thanks for letting me share that. Please pray for the Armenians right now and for the Christians there. And if you'd like to keep updated on what's going on there and find out ways to post on your social media to pray to learn more, please go to thephilosproject.org/SaveArmenia, sign up for the newsletter, and you can learn how to help the world's first official Christians, as you mentioned, Cy.
Yeah, the first nation to be, even before the Roman Empire, was Christian. Armenia was Christian. You know, there's lots of, we want to be delicate and careful in the way we speak about things, but the history of Christian countries surrounded by Muslim countries in that region of the world is not one that inspires a great deal of confidence that Armenia will be left alone and left to flourish as a Christian country. So pray for the Armenians and help the Armenians if you can.
Thank you so much, Si. Yeah, we don't, you know, people can be listening to this and say, oh, that's Christian bias. But the mayor of Baku, the capital of Azerbaijan, said in 2005 to a German audience, you know, we want to completely eradicate all Armenians. You did the same thing with the Jews in the 1930s and 40s, so you should be able to understand us, right? We're not making that up. That's a quote in public record.
It's not good when you're like, well, the Nazis did it. So, you know, it's...
Yeah, yeah.
That's never a good look. And
it's not a good look.
No, no, deadly serious stuff. Prayers for Armenia. And give the website one more time, and then we'll talk about the feminine genius.
Thank you so much. philosproject.org/SaveArmenia.
Simone, what you do in your everyday life is educate women in the teaching of the Catholic Church. Isn't the teaching of the Catholic Church, really, don't we have a lot to be ashamed of as far as our oppression of women throughout history?
Well, I wouldn't quite put it like that.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that, Si.
Well, I sometimes try to be provocative in the question to allow you to.
I know. It was very, very provocative. I would say the feminist movement is the one that has a lot to be ashamed of in terms of what they've done for women, for children, for families. I was just listening to Carrie Gress recently, who wrote a book recently called The End of Woman. And, you know, she talks about all the totalitarian regimes that killed millions and millions of people in the 20th century. But abortion, which is a fruit of the feminist movement, has killed much more people and children than any totalitarian regime has. So that's just something to keep in mind when we talk about the church oppressing women.
Well, Jesus was an extraordinary person in every way, of course, being the divine man, but it was extraordinary just as a historical figure, even if you didn't have faith in Jesus as the divine man, because at a time of a very, very kind of strict separation between men and women and very limited roles for women, he just kind of ignored all that.
He did, in a very countercultural, radical way. I mean, the whole conversation and debate about woman, that being on the table at all, is because of Christianity. It was Christianity. It was Jesus who really reminded humanity and women of their dignity. I mean, a Jewish man in the first century, dining with women, talking with women, educating women, having women as his disciples and followers, the early church so much being influenced by women, that's a very radical, very countercultural at the time idea. The idea that women had dignity, that women weren't property but persons, those are all Christian ideas. Those are Christian concepts. So we should be very proud of the church for liberating women, actually.
And how has the church done in this modern era? Let's say in the time since the sexual revolution of the 60s, how has the church done in teaching about and encouraging the dignity, the appreciation of the dignity of women?
Well, I think what's so fascinating to me is that the birth control pill, which is so much what caused this, you know, progressive, rapid feminist movement and sexual revolution. I mean, if you look at the statistics today, women are more depressed and unhappy than ever. Didn't feminist ideology promise so much liberation and joy for women? And yet women are the most depressed demographic. So, you can argue ideas, but the reality is that the statistics show, sociology shows, that women are not at all nowhere near as happy as they could be or should be. And we can really tie that to the feminist movement and the sexual revolution.
And then, of course, in that same period, we had the teaching on human sexuality that came from the Vatican, particularly Pope John Paul II. A lot of that is what you teach, is what it was, I guess, the Pope John Paul's response to the sexual revolution.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the UN just met, I think, also last week, big week last week. And again, abortion, it was, you know, the phrasing of the meeting was so insane to me. Something about the enjoyment of women and girls for reproductive rights, you know, and I thought, yeah, that's enjoyable. Interesting. So wanting to, again, make reproductive rights and abortion international law, right? This is and it was part of this conversation about, like, pandemic, you know, preparedness, right? And the best way to prepare for a pandemic is, you know, abortion rights. And so it was that same motivation that got John Paul II to write his letter to women in 1995, the abortion issue, out of a love for and a respect for women, knowing that abortion is a great violator of women's dignity and of the family. And when we look at the statistics today about the epidemic of loneliness, and the social contagion of the trans movement, I mean, so much of that is tied to the breakdown of the family. And the breakdown of the family is something that John Paul II obviously was very concerned with, and Pope Paul VI before him in his writing Humanae Vitae, where he basically said, if the world embraces a contraceptive mentality, right, if we allow a contraceptive mentality where we are separating procreation from marriage, this is going to lead to a lot of social ills, divorce, abortion, promiscuity, and a general degradation of the dignity of women. Those were all prophetic words in the 1960s, but now we actually have the social science and the sociology and all the data to back up the prophetic words of Pope Paul VI.
Yeah.
So how is this good for women?
Right. It's like the Pope said this is what's going to happen, and then this is what happened. And so you get a sense that, well, there must be some wisdom there. I mean, if you have a record like that, that if you said in 1968? That
1968, yeah, yeah.
68, that this is what will happen if you do this, and then it happened, well, that would seem to give some credibility to what the church has to say on this.
Yeah, you know what's so interesting, Si? My sister is a marriage and family therapist, and one of the things that she's putting together are workshops. So most parishes, I don't know the statistic for this, but if we're going to talk new evangelization and women and family and all that, most parishes don't offer support for marriages. Mm-hmm. And yet the statistics show that most people who leave the faith leave it because of broken families. Like your solid, happy family unit, the happiness of your family and your parents in particular, so much is tied to your personal faith. Which makes sense, right? It's logical, yeah, right?
Right, right.
So one way to counteract or remedy the sexual revolution is then to really support on a parish level the marriages, right? Because happy marriages produce happy families, and happy families, happy children, and faithful children, right? So this is a very, very practical way that we can support women, families, and children, and also faith, you know, because faith can't just remain on an intellectual level. It has to be something experienced, something that is enjoyed, that theology comes to life.
888-318-7884 is the number. Is the term we're using today, feminine genius, talking about the feminine genius. This is a phrase that I know from Pope John Paul II. Is it of his coinage, or did he get it from somebody else? Do you know?
Yeah, it's from him, from Mulieris Dignitatum, his 1908 document on the dignity and vocation of women, and he also says it in Letter to Women. So he uses the phrase feminine genius and also the genius of woman, and he's not talking about it as like a noun, like she's a genius, but the feminine genius being that unique feminine spirit that belongs to woman.
Simone Muscala is our guest. We'd love to talk with you. Whatever your genius is, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Maybe you disagree that Jesus himself or that the Catholic Church has been good for the upholding of the dignity of women and the promotion of the dignity of women. Maybe you'd just like to know more about it. You are welcome to call, whatever it is, whether you are Catholic or not. We're talking about the feminine genius from the Catholic perspective with Simone Riscala. 888 318-7884 is the number. Right back with more of that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Come together with Christ and Our Lady. Join the Dominican Friars of the Province of St. Joseph and members of the Confraternity of the Most Holy Rosary from across the country as they celebrate the Most Holy Rosary and grow closer to Christ through His Mother. From the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, the Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage Mass, Saturday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern on EWTN-TV.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Whew, we're a little bit tired around here because we had the big weekend, but it really went very, very well. I know at some point they'll put it out on the internet, but everyone should see that keynote address from Sister Regina Marie Gorman. Just beautiful. And hey, now that we're back, it's Shield Week at shop.catholic.com. What does that mean? It means that the promo code St. Michael will save you 30% off all Catholic Answers produced products. And we've got more than 500 to choose from. I don't know if you've noticed, but the Shield of Faith is part of the Catholic Answers logo. And so make use of it to get your deals right now at shop.catholic.com. Just all one word, St. Michael, St. Michael. It'll save you 30% right now at shop.catholic.com. Our guest is Simone Riscala. She's the Director of Program Development at Endow Ministries, which helps women to study and learn together the Catholic faith. We were talking about the feminine genius. And then you mentioned to me at the break that there's this letter that the Pope is going to publish October 15th about St. Therese. Maybe you should say something about St. Therese, who every Catholic knows. And she's like the most popular saint of the entire modern Catholic Church. And she seems to be a very unique example of the feminine Jesus in the heart of the Church.
Yeah, she's amazing. And this is like a really special year. Because it is and this is why Pope Francis is releasing an apostolic letter on St. Therese, because it is the 150th, this is her birthday year, 150 years, mm-hmm. It's her birthday year. And then it's also the 100th anniversary of her beatification. So it's a big year, Si. So I was very, especially because Endow is all about getting women to study important documents of the Catholic Church for the cultivation of the feminine genius.
Right.
Contra toxic feminism. I just was so delighted that the year we decided to release a study on St. Therese that Pope Francis is all, and none of this was planned. We didn't know it was her big beatification year, her jubilee year. But on October 15th, St. Teresa of Avila, the first female doctor of the Church's feast day, he is going to release, Pope Francis is going to release an apostolic letter on St. Therese.
So wonderful. Wonderful. Coming
yeah,
out.
I'm super excited.
By the way, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. So one of the things that, I mean, for example, the fact that the Catholic Church names about half of her, maybe slightly more than half of her churches after women, and that these women are examples in the faith, like this young woman, Therese of Lisieux in France, who became a Carmelite sister. The Church is not really opposing the kind of modern liberation of women from what really were and continue to be unjust circumstances, mistreatment within marriage, mistreatment in the workplace, being paid unfairly, or not even having whole areas of the economy unavailable to them. The Church is not opposing any of that.
No, not at all. And I think one of the most healing aspects of John Paul II's 1995 pastoral letter to women, a letter that he wrote to all women of the world, and he says that in the letter, I'm speaking directly to the heart of every woman, which is really great, because he's not just writing to Catholic women, he's not just writing to Christian women, he's writing to all women, because all women have this unique feminine genius. All women, simply by being a woman, have this genius that they have to offer the world, which John Paul II said was vital and essential for a healthy church and a healthy world. In that letter, John Paul II thanks women for being women, women who are wives, women who are mothers, women who are single, women who work, all the various ways in which femininity is expressed in the world. And then he apologizes for all the ways in which Christians went against the gospel of Jesus Christ and have, you know, abused women in various ways or exploited women. And he's not shy. This is John Paul II is anything but not courageous. I mean, so courageous. You know, that he's not defensive at all. He really does sincerely apologize for circumstances where the church herself may have not treated women with the dignity that she evangelizes. So it's a very healing letter. And if you've been hurt by the church as a woman in particular, and you haven't read this letter, I highly encourage you to read it along with his 1998 document on the dignity and vocation of women. If you want to read it with Endow, you're welcome to.
Which you can find at endow.org. Is that
correct? Endowgroups.org.
Endowgroups. That's what I was going to say. Endowgroups.org. Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Yes.
Endowgroups. I was getting it right eventually. Once you correct me. So let me ask you this, though. In a practical way, a woman who embraces the feminine Jesus as proposed, I mean, I don't know why I keep saying feminine Jesus, the feminine genius. I love to say the name of Jesus. I'm always happy to proclaim the name of Jesus, but I don't know why I'm mixing it up with the word genius today. So I apologize for that. But if you embrace the Catholic view of the feminine genius, in what way would that be different than just being a feminist? Like, what's the difference between the two?
Well, the word feminism and feminist is very problematic because the ideology and the movements attached to feminism, the ideology of feminine, right?
Yeah.
Is so much fraught with not really about what it means to be a woman or to help women, but how can women be more like men? That's the idea behind the feminist movement, which is not the Christian one. The right. Christian woman is not about trying to make women like men. It's about elevating the unique gifts and spirit and genius of women in their own right.
Well,
so
okay, so that would suggest to me that this is connected with the thing that everybody's talking about all the time now has to be, at least because I listen to National Public Radio, has to be the transgender movement. But there does seem to be a way in which we're so liberated, like everybody's got to be liberated from everything now. We're now planning on liberating ourselves from our biological identity, which seems like just another way of enslaving people again, particularly women, saying, well, you can't have women's sports. You can't have women's bathrooms because everybody's a woman now if they want to be.
I know. And one of the feminist goals is like smash the patriarchy. But what is more patriarchal than like men competing in women's sports? I mean, goodness, where the feminists should be outraged at that, but they aren't. And how can they be if everything is about woke, progressive politics and identity politics? You know, if you can self-determine, or if you can betray your feminine nature, why can't you betray your biological nature, right? This is the genius of Saint Therese, in the sense that there's this humility of what you've been given versus like Nietzsche's will to power. I determine reality as opposed to I conform to and respect reality.
Steve on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, says the New Testament is kind of hard on women. What do you make of that? There are passages in St. Paul that can seem very, let's say, old-fashioned in a way regarding women. But when you as a woman read the New Testament, does it feel like it's being hard on women to you?
No, I think what was hard on women is the culture that the New Testament was written in, which is that women and children were property, that you belong to either your husband or your father as property, that your husband could commit patricide. If he didn't like the baby that you bore, he'd you know, you could just, they just get rid of it. The abortion and infanticide rates were skyrocketing, that most of the abortions and infanticides that happened in the Roman Empire are of baby girls because they weren't considered full persons. I think that's being hard on women, not so much what the New Testament proposes. So we have history to really help us understand that Christianity really liberated women, didn't impress them.
That's the thing, is if you don't know history at all, then you could entirely miss what was before Christianity and what is now that Christianity has had its influence for 2,000 years.
Exactly.
We're talking about the feminine genius with Simone Riscala, who loves Jesus, which is a different word. 888-318-7884 is the number. Is relativism dead? It sure seems dead. Each day, new moral demands are made and they are presented to us as absolutes. Everything from transgender ideology to physician-assisted suicide is presented as a moral good that all right-thinking people must accept. But Catholic Answers' own Carlo Broussard says look deeper, and you will see today's moralism is just relativism dressed up in new clothes. Carlo's eye-opening book, The New Relativism, shines a light on how the sacred moral teachings of this age cover up a deep denial of moral truth. Order your copy of The New Relativism today at shop.catholic.com and be prepared to defend the truth against aggressive relativism. The New Relativism at shop.catholic.com, or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
In These 12, The Gospel Through the Apostles' Eyes, best-selling author Rod Bennett gives a riveting re-examination of gospel events from the ground floor perspective of Christ's own hand-picked successors. In his trademark storytelling style, Bennett movingly depicts what it was like for the apostles to witness Jesus' teaching and miracles up close. Why did he call them, and what did he intend for them to do? Order your copy of These 12 today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Still recovering from the conference. Just a lot of talking at the conference. And I enjoy it greatly, but I'm one of those people that then needs like 2 months to recharge my batteries. I don't know. You seem more personable than I am, Simone. I don't know if you would need to recharge, but I feel like I just need to sit in a room quietly with a fan on for about 2 months.
That's how I felt last year. I thought, how? Yeah, I did. I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing conference, and I was definitely having FOMO this year. But seeing you and Chris Check and everybody, just all the socializing, you need a week at the spa, Cy.
Oh, that's so, what I need. I need a week at the spa. That's spa. Exactly what I need. I don't know when the last time I got a mani-pedi was. I don't know. Wait, I do know when the last time was. I think I remember my grandmother clipping my nails when I was 8. That's the last time I got a mani-pedi. 888-318-7884 is the number if you would like to talk about the feminine genius. I said the right thing that time, with Simone Riscala, the director of program development for Endow Groups, which you can find at endowgroups.org. A wonderful movement of providing an alternative, really, to the kind of secular feminist offerings, which in many ways, Simone, I got to say, the secular feminist offerings, often to me, they don't. The central problem is not the feminism; it's the kind of individualism that is destructive mm-hmm. of everything. Like that it's, the church is not saying no to feminism as much as it's saying, no, you're part of a community of communities, and the family is one of those, and the natural family is beautiful in a way that it should not be denigrated by self-glorifying individualism. That's my view anyway.
No, I think you're right. It's creepy how the feminist movement has a lot of its origins and expressions in the New Age movement, in the occult, in Marxism. That's like really creepy history. But yes, it is that age old individualism. It's me versus God thing that is the real heart of the issue. And then
it sets me against everyone. It sets me against my spouse, who I've got to get.
Yes.
I'm not getting enough from my spouse. I'm not getting, the baby is a problem. Everybody's a problem instead of being a gift.
Exactly. And it, when the problem is fertility, because fertility is what sets you apart from men. And if we want to be more like men instead of seeing motherhood, whether it's spiritual or biological, as like this massive gift that generates humanity, both actually perpetuating humanity and also the spiritual motherhood that generates life in human souls, right?
Yeah.
To make that the problem when it's the gift is horrible. It's horrifying, actually.
888-318-7884 is the number. Erica is in Maryland. Erica, thank you very much for the call. Go ahead with your question for Simone Riscala.
Yeah, hi. How are you? I'm 51, and I just came back to the church after 30-plus years, and I'm just kind of diving in. And
well, welcome home.
Thank you. I was looking at veiling, and it's a small parish. I stay after to do the rosary with, there's maybe four or five of us women that do it, and I brought the veiling up to these women because I haven't seen really anyone at all veiling, and kind of got them on board. And so they started doing adoration just once a month, and I said, why don't we start it up for this time of adoration, and then I'm just going to wear it after that. And there was one woman expressed concern over what happens when people ask us why. Other women asking why, and being able to have a response that feels, I guess, empowering to them. I was kind of wondering what a response might be that would really appeal to women.
Well, I suppose you can say that it is something that sets you apart, that you can immediately see, and that women are sacred, and that veiling is a sign of that sacredness of woman. That's one way to approach it, but I wouldn't get ideological about it. It's perfectly fine not to veil. It's a beautiful tradition, but I wouldn't alienate women who don't want to veil. As an Eastern Rite Catholic, when I go to the Coptic Church, for example, that's part of the norm, the tradition. So every woman is veiling in that parish. So it doesn't polarize anybody because it's an organic part of the tradition of the liturgy. In the Roman Rite, that tradition has largely been lost. So sometimes the temptation is to use the veil as a weapon or a way to polarize or alienate. So I think your instinct is right in terms of, trying to make it attractive. But I would be careful because without that education and that formation, it can be seen as something like, oh, I'm more pious than you are. And that's simply not true.
Right. That sounds good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you very, very much. I mean, it's a tradition that was lost. And so there's always going to be, when a tradition is lost, there's always going to be, in a certain sense, if you want to, I'm a Mass in the vernacular guy. I prefer the Mass in the vernacular, but when I go to the Latin Mass, I know that the words that they're saying are the same words that, say, Thérèse of Lisieux heard when she went to Mass, or they're the same words. So there is a way in which these things do connect us to a tradition, mm-hmm. and that's good. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything against it, but I don't understand Latin, so it's the Latin Mass is harder for me, and it's easier for me to go to the vernacular Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The number's 888-318-7884. There was two young women that veiled here at Catholic Answers for Mass every day, and I asked them one day why they veiled, and they both had the exact same answer. They both said, look at how beautiful this veil is. I was like, oh, that's interesting, because actually, and they said, one of them said to me, you know, women are more interested in beautiful things than men are. That's one of the things mm-hmm. that we do better than men do. And I think that's actually true. I think we don't like to say better or worse,
right.
You know, between the two sexes, but there is an appreciation of wearing something beautiful that women have that men don't. Oh, that's why many wives have to tell us that's not what you're wearing.
The feminine, other expressions of the feminine genius. Yeah, I mean, if veiling makes you a saint and helps you pray, do it, you know? But if you're doing it to be ideological or to out of pride, don't. I mean, only you know your own heart when it comes to that stuff. Sai, did I tell you about the Magdala Center in Israel when I went this year?
No, tell me about the Magdala Center. I don't know about it.
Because you know how I love church documents, and that's like what we do.
Yeah.
The Magdala Center, where Mary Magdalene is from, I've never been here. I was in Israel, second time there. There is a church dedicated to the feminine genius in Magdala.
Really?
And you walk. Yeah, is that wild? Have you ever even heard of a church dedicated to like a papal document? I walk in, and in the rotunda of the church, in the town where Mary Magdalene is from, are the words of John Paul II. We thank the Holy Trinity for the mystery of woman.
What?
In the church.
That's wonderful. I'm so happy that that happened.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
And there are translations of it in all languages. So wherever you're coming from all over the world on pilgrimage to the Holy Land, you can walk in and you can say, oh my gosh, these are the words of John Paul II, thanking the Holy Trinity for the mystery of woman.
That's so cool too, because they only discovered Magdala a short time ago. It's not like we've known where it is for a long time. They were trying to build a retreat center and they dug it up by accident.
Exactly, because the first time I went to Israel, I don't remember this at all. And the document's only from 1988. You know what I mean? In like church history, a papal document for a church and like a new one.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty impressive. Whoever was behind that knew about the feminine genius, obviously, and they knew what they were doing.
Well, is Mary Magdalene an important figure in that? She's not the mother of Jesus. She's a woman who she just chose this. This is something that where she chose to be his disciple and follower. And she appears to be a woman of means. She seems to have the money to help support him.
Yeah.
So he depends on her for his for his daily sustenance, so to speak.
Yeah.
And seems perfectly comfortable and happy to depend on her. It seems to me that because she's a woman not related to Jesus in any way, but purely a disciple, she's an important figure for us.
She's huge. I mean, she's the first witness to the resurrection. She's the first evangelizer, you know?
Right.
And she's the one that displays the feminine genius in the sense of when the apostles after the crucifixion are all kind of hiding and scared and, you know, worried about politics. She's at the tomb and she's focused on Jesus. And she is the first witness to the resurrection and goes back and says, I've seen the Lord. And because of that, she in history has received the title. She's the apostle to the apostles. So, you know,
that's pretty
and
good.
And she's on the same liturgical, like her feast is celebrated as like an apostle, like one of the 12. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. We're talking about the feminine genius with Simone Riscala, our friend. We got to take a very quick break. You got about 15 minutes left to talk with Simone if you'd like to talk about the feminine genius. Whether you agree with what Simone has to say or disagree with, whether you are a Catholic or not a Catholic, you are very welcome here. 888-318-7884.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Wherever you are in the world, you can access the EWTN Global Catholic Network. It's everywhere. You can get EWTN's great Catholic programming on your car radio, at home on your TV, computer, or smart speaker. With EWTN's app, you can take EWTN everywhere, on your phone or mobile device. If you want your news in print, turn to EWTN's paper of record, the National Catholic Register. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. 888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking about the Church's understanding of the feminine genius. It's a great contribution that the Church has to make to the world, the true teaching about God's love for men as men and women as women, and that he has endowed us. Look at that. I used the word endow. He has endowed us each with... With the gifts that come with he made us this way, I guess is the easy way to say it, and he did it because he manifests himself in beauty. 888-318-7884 is the number. We got callers. I want to go to the callers, but tell me about the Endow Virtual Gala that's coming up.
Yes, it is happening tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern time. If you go to our website endowgroups.org, you can. Just come with your champagne, your wine glass to our virtual gala, and you'll meet two of the founders and hear about the history of this movement and, you know, get inspired about the feminine genius, learn more about the Endow Apostolate. We would love to have you register for that.
So
check out our events page.
Just go to the endowgroups.org.
Endowgroups.org, go to events, and then scroll down and register for that. We would love some new faces. This is our 20th anniversary year for Endow, and we're just so happy that our founders are coming, and they're going to talk about, you know, what inspired this movement for women to cultivate their unique feminine genius through studying the teachings of the Church.
Praise God for it. Up next, Terrence is in Georgia. And that's the name Terrence. That's the male version. I don't know if you know this, of Teresa. So, yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Terrence, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Simone.
First of all, you both are so, so kind to allow me to speak. I didn't have so much a question as a kind of a clarification. I found this topic very dear to my heart.
Praise God.
I think back into the early 70s, when Vatican II was being rolled out and people were trying to understand, you guys are too young to try to understand what this all is. And you know, the people that knew most about it were the nuns at the time. You know why? They were going to summer school.
Oh.
the documents.
Wow.
I mean, that's what they did. And
yeah.
I'm sorry they didn't have more of a voice in that. I mean, they really were very well educated on the
Amazing.
Development of Vatican II. But what I want to speak about is I really think a gem in our church right now is the rise of feminine or women biblical scholars. And I think there's some superb ones.
Yes.
They are giving us great insights into the scriptures, the New Testament, the Old Testament, from a perspective of women who perceive the times that Jesus lived in and what specifically it was involved with Christ and from the feminine perspective. I think that we should actually support these people maybe more so than we do. I think they add so much to our church right now. And development of the Gospels and the Scriptures. And
well, let's get a response from Simone, and I'll come back to you,
sure.
Terrence.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the biblical scholarship of Dr. Mary Healy. She has one on the Gospel of Matthew that's so interesting. And then I can't remember her name. She teaches at St. Patrick's Seminary. Dr. Nina, I can't remember her last name, but she's done a lot of, I know
Mary Healy's on the Pontifical Biblical Commission. I'll look up Dr. Nina, but go ahead. You were saying.
No, just another great female biblical theologian type. So yeah, I agree with what you're saying. There's more up and coming talent by way of women in terms of biblical scholarship. I also, he's a man, not a woman, but Mike Aquilina wrote a great book on women of the early church. That is, it's a great book on the contributions of women in the beginnings of the church. So,
Nina Hiraman?
Yes, that's her.
Okay.
That's her.
I thought I knew it would come to me eventually if I'd used Google well enough. I have to agree with you. I think this is one of the, but we have a long tradition of women biblical scholars in the church. It goes well back into the medieval period. Who often published in different ways than men did, didn't necessarily teach in universities, but that's not a brand new thing. But what's really new is in this modern university world, we've got superstar women biblical scholars.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and, you know, very important to the founding of Endow is Sister Prudence Allen, who wrote these three volumes on the concept of woman, an intellectual history on the idea of woman. I mean, who has time to read these three massive volumes? So Canadian University, maybe McGill University or Notre Dame, I can't remember, that asked her, hey, can you put these three, we can't teach from these three massive volumes on the concept of woman. Can you make a one book on the concept of woman that we can teach from out of university? And she is, I think she just finished it.
Oh, wonderful. So, wonderful.
Yeah. So she's another one to look out for.
Terrence, thank you very much. Was that all satisfying to you?
Sure. I, anything that we can. My life proceeds to its ending soon. Not morbidly, but just a fact. But I will say that if I have my druthers, or say if I'm taking a class on the Acts of the Apostles, and I have two volumes in front of me, and one is written by a women biblical scholar, my bias is to go to that.
Well, Terrence, you have three of the greatest saints in the church as your namesake, St. Teresa of Avila, St. Teresa of Lisieux, and St. Teresa of Calcutta. And I've thought the next pope should consider taking the name Terrence in honor of those three women. A Pope Terrence would be a great thing. But Terrence, thank you very, very much for the call. I'm going to go to Jennifer in South Dakota. Jennifer, thank you very much for the call. Go ahead with your question for Simone.
Well, it's not really a question. I would submit to you that Mary Magdalene was not the first person to see Jesus after his resurrection. Why do you think Mother Mary was not at the tomb with the other women?
Oh, see, there's some biblical interpretation that one, I don't know, I'm sure some theologian out there has considered. Mary Magdalene is given that traditional attribution, but perhaps you're right. Who's to say?
Well, certainly there's been several popes who have said they thought that Christ would have visited privately with his mother first before going to anyone else. But as far as the biblical evidence goes, it is Mary Magdalene's name who is given first. But certainly that doesn't preclude the possibility of Mary, the mother of Jesus, being there. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you very much. Liam is in Ohio. I'm only going quickly because, of course, everybody called at the end here. Liam in Ohio, thank you very much for the call. Liam, go ahead with your question for Simone.
All right, thank you. How do you see Catholic theology developing in the area of womanhood as we go forward in future years?
Well, it's very interesting. Well, there's two ways I would answer that. One, I love John Paul II's lines in Mulier Sigitato, and we thank the Holy Trinity for the mystery of woman. So there's something about the feminine genius that is always, as with all truths of the faith, going to remain a mystery. But then I do think that the work of Sister Prudence Allen is largely untapped. So I would, you know, before we ask for necessarily more, I think we need to delve into her work. And also, of course, Edith Stein on women and her work on that as well, which has largely been addressed in John Paul II's theology of the body, but not exactly.
That's interesting how you answered that, Simone, because that, you know, Terrence's point that it's wonderful that we have these women scholars. They really, like, even when you a woman scholar reading the first three chapters of Genesis, for example, insights come to women about what those chapters mean that don't occur to men. And I know we have scholars who are women scholars who are plumbing those depths. I bet we're probably just right at the beginning of that, because it's only been recently that women were granted PhDs, for example.
Yeah, I mean, there's always work to be done in theology. I mean, Sai, I've talked to you about the sacrament of confirmation. I would love some theology, more theology on the sacrament of confirmation. I mean, we need people to answer the call to study theology, to be theologians in the proper sense, you know, the science of theology, not just catechists. We definitely need a lot of catechists, but theology itself as a science.
Liam, did you have a view that you wanted to share about where you think this theology is going?
Not specifically, but it does seem to be somewhat stunted, at least as far as I've read. And I joked with someone the other day that there may be a downside to having celibate men do the overwhelming majority of your theology. So.
There may be a downside, but if there is, it can be compensated in various ways, because we don't have celibate men doing the majority of our theology anymore. We have, Liam, thank you very, very much. It is interesting to think about that. I'm so glad that Liam and Terrence called with those points, because we want to teach what the church teaches, but also there's so many more new horizons to be opened up in theology and in an understanding. And really, the caricature of Christianity is that it's anti-woman or wants to have a 1950s household or something. Like, nothing could be farther from the truth. The church is on a great adventure to find the will of God in how we live together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that I'm always a little bit sensitive to critiques about, you know, celibate men doing them.
Oh, of course, she cut out right when she started it. She was going to defend celibate men, and then the technology cut her out. Our guest is Simone Riscala, and she's the director of program development at Endow Groups. They're connecting with her again. We'll have her back here in just a quick second. But you can find out about what Endow does. And if you are a woman who's in a parish where you've thought there could be more education for women and also more conversations about what it means to be a Catholic woman, what it means to be a Catholic woman at this time in history. Endow Groups is a wonderful group to check out and find out what they're doing. Endowgroups.org is where you go. Simone, the devil cut you off right when you were about to defend celibate men. He didn't want a woman defending celibate men. We're not having it. So, but you were saying you're a little bit sensitive to when people criticize celibate men.
I think we can always kind of attribute like the circumstances as to why things aren't as maybe fruitful or as we wish them to be. But I think the point is that the real root of that, the heart of that issue, is that we have a church that needs to cultivate a culture of personal vocation, so that whether you're celibate or not, female or not, that if you have an authentic call to theology, which is a rare call, that you would be able to pursue it, whatever your state in life. That's all I want to say.
Ah, very good. Liam, thank you very much for the call. You've got a podcast series coming out on perhaps the greatest person of the modern era, the woman Thérèse of Lisieux. Tell us about the podcast.
Yes, Pius X called her the greatest saint of modern times, and Pius XI, who canonized her, said that she was the star of his pontificate. And John Paul II obviously made her a doctor of the church in 1997. This is her 150th birthday year. This is her 100th beatification year. Pope Francis is releasing an apostolic letter on her. So we have a podcast series on St. Thérèse with the Endow Podcast starting on October 1st, her feast day. Everyone's welcome to check it out. We're doing it with our friends at the Avila Institute.
That's so you just go to endowgroups.org to find out about, or? or
just look on Apple or any of your social your podcasting platforms, The Endow Podcast.
The Endow Podcast. Simone Ruscala, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. Oh, it's always just so nice to get to visit with you. Thanks for being here with us today.
Likewise, Si. Always a pleasure.
I will get a critique later from Simone that I wasn't funny enough. I didn't do enough jokes. That's what she does after the show. I get a text later that says, why weren't you funnier? I tried, Simone. All right, coming right back with Ask a Priest with Father Sam Keyes right after this on Catholic Answers Live.